thanks for joining us tonight. My name is Paula Beswick, and I am the president of BPW. I am also the foundation director for the Library Foundation here. So before we turn this over to Frankie and then to Corky Bush, who will speak after Frankie, I do need to make some thank yous. One to Jeannie Gracie Edkin, who's the chair of the Equal Pay Day Committee and on the Legislative Committee. To Laura Young, who is not able to be here tonight because she's picking up her daughter, but she got all of this great food donated for us tonight. So we got that from Sola Cafe, The Daily, Larrikin's, Chickpea Cafe, Country Corner Cafe. The Library Foundation pitched in some to be able to provide this delicious spread for us tonight. Also, thanks to all the businesses who are taking part in Equal Pay Day, businesses like Lindley Park here across the street, across the hall, that is giving 23% off to women in honor of our lacking pay that we get. I'm not sure it's quite an honor, but it's at least something. Sola is another one. I'm not sure. Rockford Coffee, Leaf and Bean, Wild Joe's are all participating. Alara Jewelry. And then also Broad Comedy. We asked Katie Goodman got wind of it, and she said, oh, I definitely want to participate. So if you bought your tickets at Cactus today, you got 23% off for the Broad Show coming up at the end of the month. Yes, which go to Broad Comedy. They rock. Also, Montana Aleworks, if you go in and say, give me equal pay for equal work, they will give you, $5 off your drink? And Montana Aleworks is actually a great sponsor of a lot of nonprofits in town, a lot of organizations, including the library and the Library Foundation. So I support them and plug them every chance I get. Also, tonight, this program is sponsored by BPW. By Montana Women's Vote, with Jan Strout is back there as the newly hired part-time coordinator for that. She will speak in a few minutes. And then the Library Foundation is sponsoring it. Elise Daly with the Downtown Boston Partnership was very helpful in getting the businesses involved. So with that, the one thing I do want to say, there's things on the back table, but today President Barack Obama had a proclamation for National Equal Pay Day. So there's some copies of it back there. Working women power America's economy and sustain our middle class. For millions of families across the country, women's wages mean food on the table, decent medical care, and timely mortgage payments. Yet in 2010, 47 years after President John F. Kennedy signed the Equal Pay Day Act of 1963, women who worked full-time are only 77% of what their male counterparts did. And it goes on to say more. So if you want a copy of that, pick that up, and hopefully we can move forward on this issue. But now I'm going to turn this over to Frankie Wilmer, who is a professor of political science at MSU. She's a former state legislator, and now she is running for U.S. Congress for the formerly Denny Rehberg seat. So please help us welcome Frankie Wilmer. Thanks, Frankie.
Thank you. Yep, the biggest congressional seat in the lower 48, and the largest geographic seat. So this was the year that John, Kyle, said that Planned Parenthood, 90% of what they do is abortions. But he said it wasn't intended to be a factual statement, so that's okay. And now we have Pete Hoekstra, who's proposing a repeal of the Lilly Ledbetter Act. If you didn't see in the New York Times a couple weeks ago, the ad that said, "You have awakened a sleeping giant." Roar. That's you. I'm just going to talk about my efforts to get past a gender pay equity bill in the Montana State Legislature. I just want to add, too, they had the extraordinary opportunity to have dinner and a few beers with Lilly Ledbetter. She is amazing. And so it was in Boston, and on that same trip, I got to meet Evelyn Murphy. She wrote a wonderful book, if you haven't seen it, called Getting Even. It's about gender pay equity. And Teresa Hines Carey, also on that trip, was the other luncheon keynote speaker in a very small group, about this size. And her work has been dedicated to raising women's consciousness about their lack of financial planning knowledge, even when they have less money, which also compounds all of these problems through economic throughout your lifetime. You pay less, you retire, you live longer, and you have less well-planned retirement funds. And so that's why so many women, one of the reasons so many women are in poverty in retirement. You all know the statistics, 77% nationwide, 73% in Montana is what we make. We had some bake sales at the legislature. We were on Pay Equity Day. We would have the cookies for women one price and for men a different price. One way of making the point, they were surprised. In Montana, 60%, more than 60%, almost two-thirds of Montana families depend on the income earned by women, either as single heads of household or as two income-earning adult households. And so those families are the ones who are losing the 26, 27%. In Native American communities, it's 56%. 56% in Montana. I don't know about nationwide, so very, very bad. In 2009, I proposed this bill. We have a comparable worth bill act in Montana. It's in the Montana code, but it only applies to public employees and it only calls on them to sort of monitor the situation. I don't think they have the right to sue, Corky, do they under that? But it did, it was early, it was 1987, something like that. And so we were kind of on the cutting edge of this and then that was the end of that. So the bill I proposed really would have amended that part of the Montana Code to extend it and also give women the right to sue. That's all I wanted to do. And it also elaborated what conditions could reasonably explain differences in pay that were not gender-based. And I worked with, you can't believe how many, the business community, the university system was one of the loudest voices of concern that this bill would end up requiring that political scientists were paid as much as biologists by some quirk, even without the gender difference. And so I sat and worked with them, and we concluded that if the market for a particular job, you know, was the basis for pay differences, that wasn't a gender variable, right? So we just worked on all this, eliminating everything that would be a legitimate reason for people to be paid differently. And the bill said if gender's the only thing left on the table, then you have a good reason to believe that that's what's causing the pay discrimination and you should go sue. It didn't cost the state a thing. In fact, I worked with the Chamber of Commerce. The current law has a penalty of $500 per pay period once a determination has been made of gender discrimination pay. And so I said, let's lower it to $250, sweeten the deal, you know, and make it like the Lilly Ledbetter Act from the date of discovering the pay inequity rather than just from the first date it occurred. Because often, especially in the private sector, this was Lilly's issue. You don't know when that discrimination occurred because the private sector doesn't reveal salaries unless you ask as a policy, and understandably so. But once you find out, then the statute of limitations clock begins. And prior to the Lilly Ledbetter Act, that statute of limitations was 6 months from the date of the inequity, which meant in her case, it was 18 years later that someone told her she should look at this, that she was probably paid $3,000 a month less than her male counterparts. That's why the Supreme Court threw it out. So let me just say, we need to keep at it. There was no reason not to pass this bill. All it said was, if gender's the only variable left to explain a difference in pay, you know, we had the level of responsibility, level of qualifications, the level, you know, of difficulty of, you know, on the job, everything that could possibly legitimately explain the difference. If the only thing left is gender, you get to go sue. And all that means is you have a right to go to court. It doesn't mean you have a right to get a guilty verdict, you know, or a finding of cause. It just means you have the right to do it. So we need to keep at it. No reason was given for the bill to be tabled. We had the best possible hearing both times, a room this full of people testifying about their own experiences, and it still went down on party lines. They wouldn't even look at us when they voted on it. So we need to keep at it. I keep reminding other people I've worked with on civil rights issues that, you know, the NAACP spearheaded the decisions that led to the Brown v. School Board and overturned separate but equal, but it took from 1890-something to 1954. So, you know, we're not going to give up. We're still here. They have awakened the sleeping giant. So, yeah. The other thing I want to share with you, and this is a button idea, was Evelyn Murphy's research, and she's an economist, the author of Getting Even, and lieutenant governor of the state of Massachusetts for some time. She said that the difference in cumulative pay over your lifetime for women with a high school degree is $750,000. That's what you're losing. A college degree, four-year college degree, it's $1 million, and a graduate degree, it's 1.5. In part because you take time off from the paid labor force to do free labor, and in that fall behind in every promotion and pay raise and benefit increase that over time cumulatively leads to this inequity. So the button is, I want my $1 million. You know, that's what you're not investing, Teresa Hines Carey would say, and in your retirement, not earning interest and ending up in poverty as a result, too. So these are real serious issues. I tried even to appeal to more conservative among us, which was most everyone in the last session, that this is not good public policy because it also costs in every way, social services, children's health insurance, all of the things that should be paid by the people employing the people who are not paying them fairly are being passed on to the public expense in public programs, social programs. So let's not give up. The sleeping monster is awake. And let's make it happen. Thank you. And I'm very sorry. There's 74 out of 435 women in the U.S. House of Representatives. That has to change. And we need a woman with a 100% record on all the issues that matter most to us, reproductive rights and so on, pay equity. I'm going to do that, but I have to go call a bunch of people and get money in the next 2 hours. But I'll see you for a beer or something like that at 8:30, okay? Thanks.
Thanks, Frankie. Barbara, not yet. Did you have a question? Just a sec. Yes, hold on, because we have Corky Bush coming next. No heavens. Barbara's worrying I forgot her. I would never forget you, Barbara. No, we've got a few more people to talk yet. Before I introduce Corky Bush, though, I do want to remind everybody that tomorrow night at Story Mansion at 5:30 is the BPW, Bozeman Business and Professional Women's Honor Celebration, where we honor the Young Careerist of the Year, Woman of Achievement, and Employer of the Year. And that's free and open to the public, and we'll have food at that event as well, and actually alcoholic drinks at that event. And it's a really nice evening, and if you join us then and want to become a BPW member, it's a discount, 10% off. Thank you, Pat. 10% off if you join that night. So please do join us there. The duplicates will be entertaining us as well. So I'm now going to turn it over to Corky Bush, who was the affirmative action officer at MSU. And I don't even know how long ago that was, Corky, but you did it for many years. 20-something years. Wow. So tonight, though, she's going to talk about other issues, and she's got a lot of things to discuss. I'm going to quit talking here and come on up, Corky Bush. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm actually here in my official capacity as vice chair of the Montana Women's Lobby, and Bozeman BPW is a member of the Montana Women's Lobby, and I thought one of the things that we could do is might like to know some of what your contributions and efforts go to. And so we're going to be talking about a workshop that I presented that's been presented a couple of other places, and that focuses on the downstream effects of what happens when you have that initial pay inequity. Because clearly, if that's all it was, and the effect stopped at being paid 26 to 30-something cents less than men, we wouldn't like it, but it might not be so bad. But the problem is that ripples through everything. And so my purpose tonight is to try to show some of those ripples and to specifically look at those ripples in Montana. Now, there are other ripples, I'm sure, that we could come up with if we wanted to think about them, but I'm using a nice little device called ALICE. And ALICE stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, and Employed. And these are the arenas in which you can look at the effect of discriminatory pay schedules. By the way, I want to tell you that this particular presentation, as all these presentations that I've been doing, is dedicated to Art Wittich, because when I was up there in Helena lobbying for the Montana Women's Lobby and talking about Frankie's bill, he said famously to me, well, if there's pay discrepancy, and then later on as I'm trying to explain ever more urgently that there is, he says, calm down, little lady. So, I haven't been little or much of a lady for a very long time. Okay, the short version of ALICE, you have these things where you just can't think of anything to say because you are so dumbfounded, you know, and I'm going like, you know, and here what I'd been doing was trying to get a quick message in, an elevator speech in, and I knew we had to go on, so I was trying to be polite, but I was very hurried. But nonetheless, if there's pay inequity, I needed to calm down about it, I guess. Well, he's our senator from the west part of Bozeman. You can find him in his law offices on Ferguson Street. I'm 68. I would imagine that he's not that. So, but nonetheless, pardon? In his thinking, more than eight, likely 88. So I want to look at these effects in terms of ALICE. In other words, what my thesis is that pay inequity is like the tumbling ALICE down, tumbling someone down a rabbit hole. It distorts all of reality and changes it, and it does so in specific ways. Now, I'm not going to read all of these because you can read them, but there are some that I think stand out more than others. And the interesting thing is how women have been working in this country for pay for a very long time. And even though our pay has been terribly inequitable, from 1950 we were paid 53 cents on the dollar. We've now worked that up to 77 cents on the dollar nationally. I mean, that's a huge improvement when you look at it one way. And 60 years... I mean, if you look at it, I did some of the math, and it turns out to be a little bit less than 1 cent a year, approximately, to get us to the percentage that we're at now. But asset poverty is an important thing when you're looking at limited assets. Asset poverty is when you don't have enough money in a savings account or accessible to you to ride out 3 months of lack of income. Now, if you watch Susie Orman, does anybody watch Susie Orman on television? Well, she talks about a similar concept. She doesn't use the word asset poverty. And she's talking about people who have a lot more assets than most of the women in Montana, because she says you should have assets to ride you through 6 months. But the official definition of asset poverty is 3 months. And the sad thing is that very, very few women in Montana meet that threshold. Most women are asset poor. It's a different kind of poverty than just how little money you make. It's how few assets you've accrued with the money that you make. And so it's the downstream consequence of being paid inequitably. And so just to look at some of this, Asset poverty is a chronic state for many women, with only 20% of married parents being asset poor, while 59% of single mothers are asset poor. So you see the difference. When I was a baby feminist, we used to say women are just one man away from welfare. Well, you're now one paycheck away from one lost paycheck away, and you don't, and women don't have the assets to ride that over. And it's really important because as the safety net shrinks, you have fewer and fewer places to go and fewer recourses. So home ownership is one way you identify assets. Obviously, we talk a lot about assets. And home ownership has taken, as we all know, a huge hit, but it still is the greatest portion of an individual's net worth, which is good, except that women face incredible obstacles to home ownership. Chief of that among them is they can't make the threshold for the down payment. And if you can't make the threshold for the down payment, you rent. And you never really get out of that. So that plus fewer and fewer people who want to rent or to do home loans to women with dependent children, women in blended families, women in all in women partner families. It's just a terrible thing. So the best asset that you can have access to in America is differentially available to men and to women. In 1995, which I'm sorry the statistic is so old, I have to tell you, you know, these statistics don't change this much. I mean, it might change from 65 to 63%. You know, it might change from 70% to 72%. But they're really pretty fixed. This is long-term systemic stuff that's going on. But it's scary. The rates of home ownership were 65% for all households. That's pretty good. 50% for female-headed households. 45% for female-headed households with children. And 19% for households headed by women under 35 with children, which is just terrible. And then if you, as Frankie was doing, you factor in minority status or you factor in culture, in other words, you're looking at race or you're looking at Hispanic origin, the numbers are even worse. It's hard to think of these numbers getting worse, but they do. Retirement savings, we all hoped more, I think, for retirement savings than we get. The thing I think that's interesting here is not only do women live longer, they have less money to live longer with. Right? And that's a real problem. So poverty for women is a terrible thing going forward because of the little amount that you get to pay. And as we have moved from defined contribution, the old retirement system that, you know, we used to be under, to these 501k kinds of retirement systems where you put the money in, what's been lost is the survivorship benefit in those old retirement plans, where if the spouse died, you had access to the money in that retirement plan to continue to live on. The 501k defined benefit plan programs don't have that. It's a huge loss for women and completely flying under the radar. So that money just, if it's not going to the person who put it in directly, it goes back into the great general fund of that account. A huge, huge problem as more and more states go to these 501, these IRA, 501k kinds of retirement plans. Am I making sense to you? Okay. And then Social Security, we all know a lot about Social Security without, I think, knowing very much. Nationally, women make 60% of Social Security beneficiaries over 65 and 72% of recipients over age 85. In Montana, this is really interesting, women make up only 54.5% of beneficiaries 65 and over. In other words, fewer women over 65 in Montana than nationally earn Social Security. And why would you bet that is? They worked on the farms and ranches. never got any Social Security for that unpaid labor, never had any to put in. Even their husbands may not have been putting much of anything in. And now, of course, they have outlived their husbands, but they don't have the Social Security to draw upon. Pretty nasty little set of effects there. Factors that limit assets. Women are less able to save and build wealth than men because they have shorter careers and lower wages. That's a sort of, well, duh. Women are more likely than men to work part-time and are in low-wage jobs, or the great trick of modern employees is to have you work just up until the benefits begin, until you get the health benefit, you get the retirement benefit, whatever it is. So if for that company, it's, let's say, 35 hours a week, women are working 34 hours a week. So they're doing all the work, and what's the difference between that 1 hour? You're doing all the work, but you don't get that benefit, whatever benefit it is. And then right down there at the bottom, you see the thing I was talking about before. A shift from pension to defined contribution plans is particularly troublesome for women because there's no joint and survivor benefit. And that's what I was trying to tell you, and often no annuity option. So the person who earns that money has access to that money, but nobody else in the family necessarily has any access to that money. So you can see the part of the problem, what makes pay discrimination worse than just simple pay discrimination, is how it gets itself built in to these systems that then themselves become discriminatory on the basis of wages or assets and trap women even more. It's like a maze that closes in on you. Because of one thing that starts, these other things push the maze closer and closer. Income constrained. We've got Alice down the rabbit hole now, and her income is constrained. And we've all talked about the glass ceiling. My favorite cartoon is a floor, and under it are all these women looking up, and on top of it are all these small group of men looking down. And the one man says to another, I've never thought of it as a ceiling. To me, it's just a floor. One study of MBA graduates found that men start out with jobs that carry a higher rank, and they earn more money. They're better at negotiating. AAUW has a new set of workshops, which we might want to think about jointly sponsoring, called Smart Start, which train women college graduates to negotiate higher starting salaries by teaching them how to read the indexes and to look at the competitive salaries and those kinds of things, and to build some negotiation skills. Because right now, women just generally tend to take the salary that they're given or ask for slightly more. Men almost always tend to ask for a great deal more. The Fortune 500 company found that women tended to begin their management careers in lower-tiered jobs. I read a really interesting study of corporate America, which found many women being over-mentored and under-sponsored. Which means that, because you get points now for mentoring women if you're a man, and so that's a good thing to do. It helps you get your job and helps you, you know, get those points and everything. So women get a lot of mentors in corporate America, but they don't get very many sponsors. And what it really takes in corporate America is not how many people have mentored you and how well you've responded to that mentoring, but whether somebody actually puts your name forward for a position, right? Says, you know, Suzanne would be wonderful for that. And even Suzanne's mentors don't do that for Suzanne. So women in the Fortune 500 companies are over-mentored and under-sponsored. And I think it was a nice little way of showing that. 1 year after graduation, this is the third one down, and it's just so incredibly discouraging. 1 year after graduation, women earn just 80% of what their male counterparts do. This gap widens over 20 years, so cumulatively over her lifetime, as Frankie was citing, a woman with a college education. We haven't done the statistics that I know of for women without college educations. But women with college educations will earn $1 million less in their lifetimes because of pay disparity and all these other things I'm talking about, having fewer promotions, having less access to assets, less money to put into share distribution in large companies. Women will earn $1 million less over their lifetimes. And that, in fact, includes Art Wittich's daughter, who graduated just last June from college. And I have always wanted, I don't have the nerve, actually, to go in and ask him how she's doing. Putting more women on the corporate ladder has not increased the number of women in executive positions in the Fortune 500 companies. It just simply hasn't. In fact, right now it's taking a dive. Fewer and fewer women are in that. Nobody quite, I think, understands why, except possibly sexism. Persistent cultural perceptions. If you're a woman, these cultural perceptions about your fragility, your inability to bargain hard, all of the things that are the stereotypes against women stay with you through your career. It doesn't seem to matter how much success you accrue. Every time, it's a blank slate for women. Whereas it seems for men, every time they get a promotion, it puts them in line for the next promotion, which puts them in line for the next promotion, which puts them in line for the next promotion. For women, it's you get to hear, and then you have to do the whole thing over again. Get mentored, get sponsored, start from the very beginning, get positive, glowing things. Having gotten that second position doesn't put you on the track to get the third one, and having gotten the third one doesn't put you on the track to do the fourth one. So it's a glass ceiling that thickens. It's not just there to start with. You have to think of it as thickening, not just staying in one spot so you can sort of burst your way through it and be out of it. The longer you're in the workforce, the thicker that glass ceiling gets. So, we've tossed most of these. Interesting research is coming out now about the effect of healthcare availability and parenthood on women's access to money and their salaries. So it's not just parenthood. We've known for a long time that every woman who has a child pays for that child over and over and over and over again in less money in her paycheck. What we hadn't realized is how much the lack of available health care has a similar effect. Women do hit the health care system harder than men. We have many more reasons to do that, and we do. But we have less access to employee-based health insurance. This does not surprise you, I don't think. Only 38% of women are covered by their employer's health plans because they are more likely to work part-time, meet that rad magic threshold, not work enough seasons, all of the various things that toss you out of health care. This is why so many women supported, whether you want to call it Obamacare or not, supported a healthcare system where they didn't have to themselves make themselves eligible for basic healthcare to meet their needs. In other words, they would be eligible by virtue of existence, not eligible by having worked the set number of hours, having done all of those other things. And there may be many problems with the healthcare bill, but that idea that as a person you are eligible for health care is a pretty indispensable basic right, and that you don't have to do things in order to be eligible to be healthy, which in this 2012 seems like we ought to have been to that sometime earlier than this. Excluding reproductive health care from standard coverage is common industry practice. And this is, you've been watching that whole kerfuffle about, well, we don't have to include that. We don't want to include it. We don't want to include health care for women who are pregnant, for women who don't want to get pregnant, for women who are having sex every single minute of every single day. Which I you know, if they well, what can I say? They must be working for the Secret Service, is what they must. They're trying for that, I guess. The practice of assigning insurance rates based on one's gender is called gender rating. Montana has been so fortunate, and not simply fortunate. We've had one of the best non-gender insurance laws in the country since the early 80s. And despite every legislative session having this insurance coverage attacked in one form or another, I mean, with one bill or another, through one means or another, it's been beaten back every time. But we can't, and we have to say thank you to BPW, because you've been right there on the front lines. This is an important issue to BPW women, as it is to AEUW women. It's the founding issue of the Montana Women's Lobby. It's the thing we fight most all the time. And it never goes away. And they can think of the most creative ways for doing this, what seems to me such a simple, basic human right that you can have non-gender rates in your insurance coverage. They find a way to attack it all the time. There are some legislators here, Dorothy, JP, Frankie, who was here. Did I see somebody else? Carol, wherever she went to. Carol, just give them a great round of applause, because they're the ones who saved it. Pardon? Marsha Youngman was one of, she worked for the Montana Women's Lobby for a number of years and did statistics that now have been used nationally. Becoming a parent, you're telling me I gotta get done, right? Okay. Becoming a parent has different outcomes for men than for women. I know you probably had that in mind, you knew that, but you might not have known that simply being a parent, 10 years after you have become a parent, you're 23% of women are out of the workforce altogether, and 17% more than that are working part-time. Among fathers, only 1% are out of the workforce, and only 2% worked part-time. Now, since every dollar counts, right, and counts more now that we've lost the defined benefit retirement packages and lost the health care, or may lose the health care, you can see that every minute that you're out of the workforce counts and counts and counts against you. I'm going to quickly go to wages, because you can read all of this. There's still a wage gap. There is an academic industry of trying to find, to do studies that find reasons why the gap in pay for women is not due to their gender, but instead is due to something else. And so there's study after study, and this has got to be the most well-researched thing in the whole entire planet, because everybody wants to find the reason that's not sex that accounts for women being paid less than men. And they've tried everything. Now, if you look at the second paragraph under explained and unexplained, you'll see just a small list. We needed to cut it down to one page, so we cut off probably a whole line and a half of factors that have been examined in research projects to try to explain the discrepancy in pay as due to something other than gender or sex. And my favorite is the selectivity of either the school someone went to or the employer. In other words, if you go to Harvard, it just accounts for that. Just going to Harvard is why you might earn more money than someone who went to MSU. Unfortunately for all these studies, all of those factors account for maybe just a little tiny titch of the reason that women, of the lack of equal pay. And what you have to boil it down to, after you've taken all those explain factors out of the equation, and you still have discrimination in pay, it's sad in its way for all these researchers, but they're left with sex as the reason for the pay discrepancy. So you can shed a tear for all these studies that work so hard to rationalize away discrimination based on something other than gender and sex. That's just me, but the unexplained part of all these studies, singly and collectively, is systematic gender discrimination. You can read the rest of this. There's still a wage gap. The wage gap is getting hit a little bit, but it's certainly not going away. Education does make a difference in the wage gap. If you go to college, you move from 73% of what men earn to 77% of what men earn. Now, the problem with that statistic, and I'll end on this, is that men and women are both charged the same amount to go to school. They take out the same amount in student loans. But just as it takes us until the 17th of April to get to where men and women are actually earning the same amount of money finally in a year, the same is true. Women, if you take out $20,000 in student loans, and your salary upon graduation is 77% of men's, you do the math. Your loan is actually 23% higher than men's loans, right? So what you have to pay back due to this wage gap is 23% more than men in terms of your effective income. Now, that's not in terms of the actual amount of the loan. It's in terms of the effective income. So the message is, it's important to get as much education and training as you possibly can. Absolutely. But it's also important to be very vigilant because your salary is going to be lower upon leaving college, 23%, right? And you are going to have to pay back the same amount of student loans based on that lower salary. So, again, it's discrimination. It's discrimination. It's not all these other factors. It's discrimination. Or I could say, it's discrimination, stupid. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Corky. And again, I'm Jeannie, and I am the program coordinator for the Bozeman Public Library Foundation, and also I'm on the legislative committee for BPW, and I'm the chair of Equal Pay Day. So thank you so much for coming. I'm going to be really brief so we can get on with the movie. But I did want to say, you've heard all this information, and one thing that you can do is you can sign the petition that was circulating, or it's in the back of the room for the, what is it called? The Paycheck Fairness Act. I wanted to get it exactly right. Okay, so Barbara, did you want to say something briefly? Very briefly?
As we women lose our personhood, guess who is a person? According to the Supreme Court 2 years ago with the Citizens United, corporations are now people with free speech, in terms of as much money as they want to donate, they can, to our political process, our elections, and to sway our people in our government. Well, we are lucky because on May 7th, over at the Labor Temple, Monday, May 7th from 6 to 8 p.m., David Cobb, who is representing Move to Amend, will be here. He will talk about it. He will answer questions. This is not the only way to clean up our act, but it's one of the ways. It's going to take a long time, but we have to start somewhere. For those of you who like to read, Clemens has just published a book. He published it in paperback instead of hardcover because he wanted everyone to read it. It's called Corporations Are Not People. So with that, fast enough.
Perfect. Thank you, Barbara. If you have any questions about the legislative committee, Sally Babcock and Jan Strout are our co-chairs. Jan's going to come up and talk and wear her other hat of Montana Women Vote.
And I know you're all waiting for the movie as well as all the other good things, but I just wanted to thank everyone for being here. This is a really, really great turnout. And I just want to briefly introduce some of the women who make our jobs in registering women to vote, getting out the vote even better and even easier, because this is why we do it, to elect great people, but especially great women to office. So I'm really honored. I'll just say their names quickly. Please raise your hand. But we have some women running for office and women elected to office in the room. I'd just like to honor my favorite Shiro, Dorothy Eck, to begin with. Made the Constitution in Montana the most progressive in this country. Thank you, Dorothy. I love this woman. J.P. Palmachowski, of course, has been in office, will be back in office, we hope, as a state rep. We, of course, heard from Frankie. I also want to acknowledge Carol Stahl, who has been a state rep as well. And we have two other fabulous women running for office, Marty Livingston. Did she stay? Okay. Well, she'll hopefully be back. And, pardon? She's campaigning, of course, making fundraising calls. And last but not least, April Bonamici. All right, there she is. I'm introducing women running for office and women who have been elected. So thank you, April, for being here. Just want to briefly say that Montana Women Vote is really, we're here to ultimately achieve what has been discussed already for the last hour. I'm not going to spend any more time other than to say, you know what matters, you know what's at stake in 2012, you know what the issues are, and we assume most everyone is registered to vote. But guess what? Just in case you moved, you changed your name, you would like to be able to vote by mail absentee, or something else has changed in your life, you didn't vote in 2008 or 10, then you really do need to register again. We have materials in the back. We'll do this at the end of the movie. So please let us update your registration. But more importantly, equally importantly, is the ability to make sure all women are registered, engaged, educated, mobilized, and voting. We know what happened in 2010 when women, among others, didn't vote in the numbers that we have. We saw the results. We're feeling the results. We do not want those results again. So we really do need to ask your help to be a part of our volunteer team. We have great opportunities to register and educate. We have materials. Just one of them is a Who's Who in Politics. Helps everyone engage with exactly how do we connect the dots between who's elected, what the policies are, and how they impact women's lives, the families, and communities. We also publish a voter's guide. We'll have one right before the primary on June 5th that'll cover, the primary's got a lot going on this particular time. We've got some contested races. We just got rid of a ballot issue on the Supremes that will not be with us any longer. We can applaud for that on our state Supreme Court. But we have a number of reasons why it's important to vote for the primary election and then, of course, the general coming up on November 6th. Last but not least, we'd like you to sign up another sign-up sheet. If someone could pass that around to become a volunteer. I'm going to do a training this Friday at the co-op from 10 to 11, and then we've got a full slot of other volunteer opportunities, grocery stores, health clinics, broad comedy, MSU Women's Center, you name it, we'll do it, we'll find it. Just tell us how you'd like to do it. It could be 2 hours a week, 2 hours a month, 2 hours between now and November. Last but not least, Montana Women Vote, BPW, all the good groups here are involved with the march and rally to unite against the war on women. This is one of the other main reasons we want to get everyone out registered, engaged, and politically active. It is April 28th, this Saturday. We are carpooling here from Bozeman. Bring lunch, bring your family, bring your friends. We have sign-ups in the back to link people for rides, and we need everyone to go who can possibly go. It's going to be amazing, great speakers, great energy, and hopefully all of you. So thank you so much for your time. I just want to say the Iron-Jawed Angels, I've had a chance to see it maybe 10 times, and I love it every time. It's one of the most inspiring films that has been made about our lives, our experience, and why investing in women in all aspects of democracy matter. So please be inspired, and then come and see us in the back of the room right after the film before you go get a drink across the street. So we'll get you registered. We'll get you signed up. Thanks so much. Enjoy the movie.